This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Biomega Fish Oil from Biotics Research. For over 40 years, Biotics Research has been providing the highest quality supplements, surpassing industry standards. Biomega Fish Oil contains therapeutic doses of vital omega-3s in the triglyceride form, which is highly bioavailable. Biotics Research ensures maximum purity and freshness by managing their fish oils from catch to capsule, verified by rigorous independent testing. For more information, go to drhoffman.com/biotics research. That's drhoffman.com/biotics research for Biomega Fish Oil. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's my favorite time of the week because it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. It's an opportunity to bat around some important topics with my good colleague here, our nutritionist in residence, Layla Mudin. And we invite your questions, radioprogram@AOL.com. This is a forum for getting your most urgent questions and concerns aired. And so how you doing? You know, we're in the midst of 2021. It doesn't seem much better than 2020, though. It's a little bit little bit of disappointment.
Right.
You know, I was
so
hoping...
So far. And it's cold out.
and it's cold. And it's oppressive.
And it's cold.
And it's dark.
And the days aren't long enough yet.
Right, right. So, you know, we eagerly anticipated 2021 saying, ah, finally a respite from 2020.
Yeah.
Put 2020 in the garbage hamper.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, 2021 has so far failed to deliver.
Yeah.
This is the time of year for dieting.
Yes.
Right. And implementing those New Year's resolutions.
Right.
And a lot of people are coping with the COVID-15, that phenomenon by which people gain weight in lockdown and, you know, because they're precluded from their usual routines and they're close to the fridge.
Right. The fridge is right there.
And they're eating comfort food.
And, gee, I'm bored.
And DoorDash.
And what shall I do now? Let me go nibble.
DoorDash makes it really easy and convenient.
Exactly.
All you do is you press a button. It's like no effort. I mean, it used to be like, okay, foraging, you know, on the savannah, you'd have to go out and you'd have to hunt animals. And then, you know, you're out of luck and, you know, hopefully the wifey would be digging up some roots and berries.
Yes, there was the gatherers.
The gatherer, because, you know, the truth of it is that the hunters, they were so heroic. They came back with these big, the big game mastodons. Mostly they came up empty. It was actually the women who contributed 90% of the calories.
Yeah.
It's
like,
where's your husband? Oh, he's off hunting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So the big shot, he never comes back with it. He came back with like this little scrawny rabbit the other day. You know, why can't he bring us a mastodon?
Exactly. Oh, my gosh.
But meantime, I've got some tubers and some roots and berries that, you know, we gathered. Mm-hmm. So we put in the cook pot. Now it's easy, you know, because you don't have to go to the store.
No.
Because, oh, my goodness, store, lockdown, masks. So you sit at home and you press a button, which that's not a huge caloric expenditure to press a button. Somebody comes to the door, delivers, you know, you hand them a couple of bucks tip, and then there you go, chow down. This year, you know, we eagerly anticipate the U.S. News and Reports annual rating of popular diets.
Oh, gosh.
And this,
every January this occurs.
And this year, they did not fail to disappoint. Once
as
again,
as usual, I would
as
say.
Usual, they delivered their recitation of the top diets, and towards the bottom, the very bottom, keto diet and paleo diet. They don't like the keto diet and paleo diet, and they don't like the low carb diet. Anyway, Atkins, you know, relegated to the near the bottom.
Yeah,
their panel of experts. I don't know where they dig these people up. Rate the Mediterranean diet.
Mm-hmm.
And the DASH diet as number one. And the DASH diet is a starchy diet, which could work for some. I mean, it may be an improvement over a horrendous diet because it's lots of fruits and vegetables and, you know, whole grains, low-fat dairy.
Right. A lot of whole grains.
The real misconception because there's no evidence that low-fat
you know, has an advantage over high fat. In fact, high fat provides more satiety.
That's right. That's right.
So anyway, yeah, the Mediterranean diet, number one, according to U.S. News and World Reports. Mm. And it's perennially number one. It always ends up number one.
Right. Well, it contains all the food groups, which keeps the food companies happy, big agriculture and all of that, because, you know, we still have practitioners out there saying you will just die if you don't eat all those carbs.
It's kind of a wishy-washy triangulation. It's like, keep everybody happy, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, have it in moderation. And the question, you know, when you're talking about the Mediterranean diet, as with the paleo diet, mm-hmm. is which version of the Mediterranean diet? Because the paleo diet is it's kind of in the mind of the beholder.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So is it...
Or the Mediterranean diet is in the mind of the beholder, because the American Mediterranean diet has been bastardized and looks more like the government's My Plate, which used to be the food guide pyramid.
Totally.
And, you know, not quite right.
Where's
the lamb chops?
The dishes that are served up in the Mediterranean diet bear as much resemblance to a hearty Mediterranean peasant fare as General Tso's chicken resembles traditional Chinese cuisine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's bastardization for Western palates. You know, remember, you know, when we were growing up, it was like the joke, and it was like Johnny Carson did this joke and all the comedians did this joke about how, you know, after eating Chinese food, you feel hungry.
An hour later. What happened?
Right.
I just ate all that food.
But they fixed it.
Yeah.
The Chinese are smart. The immigrants who set up, you know, Chinese restaurants, so they made it, they Americanized it. They put in more fat, more sugar, mm-hmm. more fried food.
Right.
And they turned it into really like a rock'em sock'em high calorie thing.
Exactly.
So,
not MSG too.
So for example, I mean, in the Mediterranean diet, you know, which version of it is it one that has a lot of pasta and servings of artisanal bread? Is that the Mediterranean diet we want? Or a lot of people who are advocates of the Mediterranean diet are sort of stealth advocates of vegetarianism. They claim erroneously that Mediterranean people consume no animal protein or minimal animal protein.
Very little meat, maybe once a month. What?
What?
So what island in Greece are you not finding a lamb chop?
Yes.
Or some really great fish.
Right. And Spain,
something.
Pork.
Exactly.
And, France, pâté de foie, goose liver. Mm-hmm. And so it's you know, maybe they don't have, 22-ounce sirloin steaks there.
Right.
But they do have they do have animal protein.
Yes.
It's not a vegetarian diet. It does have tons of vegetables, though.
Yes.
That's the good thing.
Lots of vegetables.
Right.
Lots of produce, which
is
wonderful.
And vegetables that we're not even that acquainted with.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, one interesting thing is, I remember, and this is when travel was permitted, I remember flying
the good old days.
The good old days. Flying into Madrid or flying into Rome.
Yeah.
And the flight path of the planes took you over these vast greenhouses,
yeah.
you know, with plastic sheeting over them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even in the inclement weather, they were growing really wonderful fresh produce for
yes.
the exacting taste of the inhabitants of Madrid or Rome.
Yeah.
And, you know, so this, even before I landed, it signaled that there was going to be some really wonderful fresh vegetables on my plate and, you know, mm-hmm. Artisanal stuff. So, does the Mediterranean diet condone pizza, for example? Well, you know, pizza is kind of like General Cho's chicken. It's kind of an aberration from the traditional peasant diet.
Right.
Not consumed very much. And, you know, I was kind of surprised. I mean, look, things have changed there.
Yeah, that's true. Things have changed there.
The Mediterranean diet is really kind of an endangered species.
Mm-hmm. The real Mediterranean diet.
Exactly.
I mean, think about it. Even in Italy, pasta is not a main course.
Right.
Like it is here in America. It's one of the smaller first courses.
I was very surprised.
Then you bring out the medallions of veal.
Yes.
And your broccoli rabe.
Yep.
And you finish off with a beautiful salad. Yeah, in Italy.
The way I found out about this is I had an Italian roommate. He wasn't from Italy. He was an American-Italian, in college. And he invited me over to his house for dinner. And, you know, it was like, great, an opportunity. We were starving, you know, college students. We get free dinner. And I go over there, and they served in the traditional fashion the antipasta, antipasto.
Yeah, antipasto.
And then a little pasta dish prior to the main dish. So the pasta was not the main dish.
Yes.
It was a little bit of an accoutrement.
Right. On a salad plate.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I took the liberty for an article I'm writing to look up some of the things that are, would you say that all of the Olive Garden is kind of representative of the American interpretation of Mediterranean food?
I've never been to an Olive Garden, so I can't even tell you. I don't even know what's there.
Me neither.
I've never been to one.
But it is a way that this diet has been popularized.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you go there, it's possible to order a virtuous herb-grilled salmon, which is 460 calories, or a grilled chicken margarita with 540 calories. But they're listed alongside something called Asiago Tortelloni Alfredo with grilled chicken, which is 1,980 calories. That looked really good. That was a bomb, though.
That was a bomb.
1,900
tortellini with all that cream and cheese.
and it was like fried with a, you know, whatever.
And bring on the breadsticks.
Bring in the breadsticks.
Yeah.
And then there's something called the Tour of Italy, with the implication is you're really going to get the Mediterranean diet. And that's a potpourri of cheesy pastas at 1,550 calories.
Oh, my gosh.
So bon appetit.
Oh,
nom, nom.
Yeah.
And then, let's have dessert. The Olive Garden warm Italian donuts.
Oh, my.
It's like goes right to your pleasure center in the brain.
And after a plate of pasta, somebody bring a stretcher. You're all going to be asleep.
810 calories.
Oh, my goodness.
But that is not to be outdone by the chocolate brownie lasagna. It is like a lasagna, but it's made with chocolate. And that's 910 calories.
That's crazy. You could eat 4,500 calories just for dinner.
Right.
With everything.
And for reference, what is the average, you know, a middle-aged adult?
That doesn't include your wine or anything.
The average middle-aged male or female, what are the caloric values for them?
Typically should be between 1,800 to about 2,500 a day. Depending on if they're sedentary or more active,
right.
Pretty much.
So you're right there. You're done.
Yeah.
That one meal.
That's
is
it.
Good. Okay.
That's it. Forget
so,
about.
So, you know,
wow.
Early on, you know that we talked about the salad and salmon diet for decades around here, and that is a version of the Mediterranean diet.
Yes.
But I urge people to eat as if the flour mill had never been invented.
Yes.
They say Marco Polo, the Italian, went to China, and you discover noodles. And he said, this is really cool, let's bring it back. So that was already a corruption of the very traditional Mediterranian diet.
That's right.
Right?
The pasta came from China.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Blame it. Again, COVID-19.
Yeah.
Pasta, blame the Chinese.
Right, right.
They've been undermining the West for...
Gift that keeps on giving.
they've been undermining the West for centuries.
Yes.
Right? They're doing us in. Okay. So the point being Mediterranean diet, but really, you know, look for a true blue zone Mediterranean diet interpretation.
Exactly.
You know, fish, chicken, eggs, yogurt, some cheese.
Go to Icaria, go to the islands of Crete, go to, you know.
Lots of olive oil.
Yes.
Red wine.
They practically drink it.
Unless you're not in danger, you know.
Yeah.
Telling people to drink red wine, I mean, it's like if 10% of people are going to become alcoholics, it's not a great idea to urge people to drink red wine.
No.
It's like, how many patients do we sometimes say, well, you know, so how much alcohol do you consume? So, well, I have a little with dinner. It's like, how much do you have? Well, me and my husband have a bottle. What's a half a bottle of red wine?
Right.
That's a lot.
Yeah. That's anywhere, depending on, you know, who's measuring it. A bottle of wine is either 4 to 5 to even 6 glasses of wine.
Right.
The 750 ml. Depending on whether your pour is 3.5 ounces or all the way to 6 ounces.
Hmm. Right. So anyway. A wishy-washy recommendation.
Totally.
Right.
Totally.
And again, if we really want a therapeutic diet, say for someone who has diabetes, we probably don't want them to eat at Olive Garden, and we probably don't want them to even eat the grains that are permitted on a more rigorous Mediterranean diet.
That's true. Even if they're whole grains, they're not great for somebody with high blood sugars. It will only exacerbate the problem.
Even if it's whole grain tortellini?
Whole grain tortellini? Oh, gosh. Pass.
Okay, so let's get to questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions.
Okay, we've got one from David. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, happy 2021. Thank you both for all your dedicated service. Happy New Year to you too, David. Thank you.
Yes, we got that's just representative of many of the very nice greetings and acknowledgments that we got for the New Year. So we appreciate your loyalty and your laudatory comments. Thank you.
Do you have an opinion regarding the supplement Prevagen? Is there any truth to their claims? Stay safe.
You know, what's interesting about Prevagen is that there seems to be a disconnect between the evidence for its efficacy and the degree to which it is marketed. I was listening to a football game, and one of the sponsors was Prevagen. Which, that's big bucks sponsorship.
Yeah, that's a lot of...
Was like NFL...
That's expensive
so,
ad time.
I was approached by the makers of Prevagen about 20 years ago when they were just getting started. Mm-hmm. And they presented the information, and they said, we'd like to become a sponsor. And I said, it's interesting what you're doing, but I see that a lot of the studies are animal studies, very small studies, where you show that taking the Prevagen product increases the cognitive ability of dogs. And then they said, no, we have some human studies. And I looked at the human studies, and the human studies seemed very sketchy. They were small studies. They were not performed at major reputable universities. The results were kind of subjective. Mm-hmm. And I also think that the studies were frankly sponsored. There is an element of research where it's sort of pay to play, where you say, we'll give you the material, we'll pay you and commission you to do the research.
Yeah.
And, we'd love for the results to look positive. So in all these years, I don't think that there have been a lot of additional studies that show that Prevagen works.
Yeah. What is Prevagen? It's jellyfish
it's
protein.
It's actually aquaporin, which is a protein extracted from jellyfish. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't quite understand the method of action of aquaporin, how aquaporin could work on the human brain. Mm-hmm. It's thought that somehow it works on, calcium channels, to allow the ingress of beneficial things into the brain. That's at least how it purports to work. But in terms of the big science, I've not seen that work substantiated elsewhere. So I would say that, I don't think it's that beneficial. The other thing is now they're marketing on testimonials. Well, it's easy to elicit testimonials from people who take something and think that they're doing, every day and every way, they're feeling better and better.
Exactly. Testimonials are not the first thing to look for.
Right.
In trying to critique.
Very low on the evidentiary level.
Absolutely.
The highest level of evidence is what's called a double-blind placebo-controlled trial. I got to say that I put some stock into N-of-1 studies, things that are accounts of an individual getting an incredible breakthrough by taking something or other.
Yeah.
In terms of the pantheon of science, the hierarchy of legitimacy, the testimonials are ranked near the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you have it, David.
Yeah.
What Dr. Hoffman thinks of Prevagen. Okay. Yeah. All right. I see that ad a lot on the radio, too.
Yeah.
On TV, right?
Yeah. They're well-financed. They're well-financed.
Right. We've got an email from Dina. During your radio show, a person called in asking about alkaline water, which you generally do not favor. I, however, have used alkaline water for reflux and GERD as recommended by Dr. Jamie Kaufman on
your
podcast.
Who's been a guest on my show, yeah.
Yes. Would you recommend alkaline water in the case of reflux or GERD? It is expensive to maintain.
Right. I would say that's a little more plausible than the notion of alkalinizing your tissues with alkaline water. because as we said, the body sort of defends its pH.
Yes.
And in the
it's
face
about
of
7.4.
I mean, you could drink bicarb, you know, which is very alkaline, bicarbonate of soda,
yeah.
And your body's going to buffer that with acidity, and you'll excrete it, and you won't change your pH much. But there may be a local effect, which means you know, if you bathe
your esophagus
with a little something a little more alkaline. But you know, then again, you could also take Maalox or something, which is
exactly.
very alkaline.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not as healthy.
Right.
But, you know, or just take calcium carbonate pills, which is Tums,
mm-hmm.
you know, or I don't like Tums, but, you know, mm-hmm. you could just get calcium carbonate chewables.
Alkaline water.
Yeah, and that's going to give you some alkaline effect.
Yeah. I think, Dina, the more important thing is the diet for
mm-hmm.
your reflux and GERD,
right.
and especially the list of foods to avoid.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're not going to follow a perfect GERD diet, but at least look at the list of foods to avoid. It could be chocolate. It could be many raw vegetables, not just garlic and onions, but it could be raw carrots, and it could be raw broccoli and eggplant. I don't know who's eating raw eggplant, but it's on that list. Coffees and teas are very acidic.
Yeah.
So you want to be careful of that.
Yeah.
So it's more important to do the diet the right way so you're not maybe having to depend on having to maintain a budget
water.
For your alkaline water.
Right.
Or something.
Yeah, I think I'm going to line up somebody to talk about. They're an expert on aloe vera. I'd like to get them on the show.
Yeah.
You know, you know, maybe they can give us all the ins and outs and the facts on aloe vera.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Dina, thank you for that question. Dina is a longtime listener.
Mm-hmm. Good.
All right. We have a question from Jeanette. Thank you for considering my question, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. My recent comprehensive blood work panel took a closer look at my thyroid, and the only hormone that was out of range was anti-thyroid antibodies,
mm-hmm.
120, or anti-TG. She writes anti-TG. I wonder if she means
thyroglobulin.
Thyroglobulin, okay. And she says, I heard from a functional medicine doctor this could be due to a complication with my liver processing, but that my thyroid is healthy. But since my mother and her brother recently were diagnosed, my mother with Sjogren's, my uncle with lupus, I'm wondering if I should not be checked more closely for autoimmunity.
Right.
Especially with regard to thyroid. What is the best test?
Well, you know, I have to say that it's very, very common, especially for women, to exhibit some thyroid autoimmunity. Very common. And that may lead to Hashimoto's thyroiditis,
mm-hmm.
which is the most common cause of hypothyroidism.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a little bit of smoldering going on in her thyroid. It doesn't necessarily portend mm-hmm. autoimmunity elsewhere. You know, a simple test to perform would be a C-reactive protein.
Sure. She has a positive ANA.
I was going to say ANA.
She has the antithyroid, the antibodies.
So she's got some
ANA.
Signs of autoimmunity.
Yeah.
Now, that may not rise to the level of a disease. I mean, a rheumatologist could do the very discerning workup to determine if she has, you know, anything, a specific autoimmune disorder. But there's a ton, especially women, with mild autoimmunity. And that may manifest as subtle symptoms of fatigue or joint aches. But it doesn't rise to the level of lupus, God forbid, or something like that.
Yeah.
I like working with patients like this because these are patients who do well with, at the very least, a gluten-free diet, if not an autoimmune paleo diet.
Yes, yes.
Which consists of?
The autoimmune paleo diet, which is pretty much you're completely grain-free, not just gluten-free, and all dairy is gone. Not just cow's milk dairy, because we know that sheep and goat milk casein is a little better tolerated, but all the dairy is
mm-hmm.
gone. And then on top of that, we also eliminate the nightshade family
right.
vegetables. Tomatoes, all kinds of peppers, white potatoes, eggplant, tobacco if you're a smoker or if
mm-hmm.
you're around secondhand
mm-hmm.
smoke
mm-hmm.
or anything like that. So to help bring those thyroid antibodies down, I would go minimum. Gluten-free,
yeah.
dairy-free.
There's a very strong correlation between gluten sensitivity, even in the absence of celiac disease, and
mm-hmm.
autoimmune thyroiditis.
Yes.
So at the very least, I would do that. And, you know, is it's not something to really worry or fixate about. It's just a sort of a call to action that maybe the autoimmune tendency is heating up a little in your body and you should...
This can be put into remission.
Really?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
We have patients that they are in remission.
Reverse it. Yes.
Yeah, reverse it. Exactly. Like no longer on paper do they have Hashimoto's, for example.
It simmers down. Yes.
Right. Right. So, Jeanette, that would be an avenue for you to take for proper diagnosis. So, thank you for your very thoughtful question.
Yep.
Best of health to you.
Okay. There's a good point which to pause because we divide our podcast into two parts. So in part two, give us a preview of what we are going to be tackling.
Many years ago, you had an interesting guest who talked about the problems of accumulation of iron in blood and tissues.
That's a good theme.
So would you recall his name or recommend or a book or anything? And what are the problems with iron overload?
Okay, good question. Mm-hmm. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we'll be right back to field more of your questions. Radio program at AOL.com, the place to send them.